This is Brock and Saul.
Brock Heward and Mark, Matt, Marcus. Sorry about just
Mike.
Presented by Carter, Volkswagen, and Ballard.
On Seattle Sports Station.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Where's like the Buff Dudes at?
Now here are your hosts, Brock Heward and Mike Saul.
Let the fire!
Well, good morning. Happy Wednesday. Happy day before Thanksgiving. Brock, happy almost one of the best football days of the year. Justin and I were talking about our favorite Thanksgiving football day memories. I'm sure you have a few games you've watched, games you've played in. What do you love about Thanksgiving and football?
Yeah, pretty special stuff growing up there on 9th Street in Puyallup for us, Mr. Lefko. It was just, you know, Grandma Peg just making unbelievable food all day long. It's hunkering down in the family room with that hot stove, you know, going, putting the fire in there. And, yeah, like in between games or halftime, heading out and throwing the football around. And pretty neat day. For me, just personally, I think January 1st growing up was a bigger day than Thanksgiving Day. To me, it was Keith Jackson. It was the morning bowl game, usually the Blue Bonnet Bowl, and then it was the Rose Bowl in the afternoon in the hills, and it's finishing with the Sugar Bowl, and I can Danny Werfel and the Gators and the Seminole. I just remember that day probably is a little more meaningful. Keith Jackson calling those Rose Bowls, who is just my lifeblood as far as, you know, broadcasting and everything going. So, but it is Thanksgiving for the pro guys, number one and number ones.
Do you know that we're on a pretty historic anniversary of a big Thanksgiving football moment? 10 years ago yesterday, your guy Mark Sanchez had a play that is now known as something pretty famous.
Was it really?
The butt fumble was 10 years ago yesterday.
We are ranking butts.
Oh, no.
All right, back to the body show here.
Huh? it took 2 minutes.
Butts ranked.
Now, we are ranking butts on the day before Thanksgiving.
Well, Dick Butkus is probably going to go.
There we go. Dick Butkus.
Yeah, that's a good one. A little Sir Mix-a-Lot, of course, going to be on there. Was that really 10 years ago?
10 years ago.
I never got to be a part of the Thanksgiving game. KJ is going to be in an hour. I don't think he ever played on a Thanksgiving game day game either. I don't think the Seahawks in my memory.
Earlier, I remember the game where Richard Sherman and Russell Wilson were eating turkey on the 49ers logo.
Oh, that's true. I mean, they must have. No, you're right. They had to. Otherwise, they wouldn't have been eating turkey. So, no, you're right. So we'll ask KJ about that. Thursdays are always short weeks, these games. I know the players dread, coaches dread. It's super, super tough coming like the Vikings off of a Sunday blowout, and all of a sudden you got to get right back to work and play on Thursday. But for us as consumers and fans, man, it is awesome.
It is great. And we have a great lineup coming up. Great show ahead. Kalen DeBoer is going to join us at 7:30. Big Apple Cup to talk about. New contract for the UW head coach. He'll mention that. KJ Wright, as you know, what he does on Wednesdays, 8 to 9. And then I think I'm going to sit out when you, Malcolm Smith, and KJ are here at 8:15. I don't know what I'm going to add. I'm not an NFL player. I'm going to try to convince Malcolm Smith I was. He doesn't know me. I'm going to tell him, like, right. Hey, Malcolm, welcome. I mean, we're all NFL guys here. So as a fellow NFL player, what do you think? Blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
So Malcolm Smith at 8:15.
I would suggest if you go down that road, you paint yourself as like a old Notre Dame offensive guard. And you played like 9 years between Cincy and I don't know, somewhere on the east, you know, Carolina.
Well, he would know Notre Dame because USC probably played them a lot, right?
True, but you're older.
But like, that's true, I'm older.
You were a guard in the 70s for Notre Dame.
Just must have missed you. Our paths must have just crossed in college and in the pros, you know.
That'll be super fun. And then we got mean tweets, and then we do have Justin's ranked. I know he's been working on. So
yeah. It's Washington Wednesday.
Week,
it's a big day.
Yeah. Big day.
We do want to get into kind of some second half predictions, and we're going to get into this in depth with KJ. Justin was mentioning, I think it's okay, you can call this the second half. I was like, you know, it's kind of the second act, almost like a play where you have a first act that's usually longer, the intermission, and then the second act. But you reset, you gear up for that final performance. So the Seahawks are resetting. They're getting ready for the final seven games of the regular season. And I just wanted to kind of look at who you think will have big performances. Who are the guys that we have to watch for? So a couple of things.
Okay.
First of all, is there any concern that we might see regression, especially when it comes to the rookies? The rookies have been such a big impact this year. We know about that thrown out there, maybe not real, maybe it is for some people, that rookie wall, that term that gets thrown out there.
Yeah.
Is there any concern we might see some regression from the rookies?
If I have a concern in that class, I don't think it's the DBs. And Pete is so tuned into those guys. He's a former DB coach himself. I think Carl Scott and that crew have done a phenomenal job. I really don't think those guys will have a hard time. Boye Mafe, I don't think will have a hard time. He's already, you know, kind of splitting reps. If anything, he might be a guy that pops even a little bit more in the final 7 weeks. Ken Walker, I think, is, you know, having splitting carries the first half of the season with Rashad Penny, and then obviously owning it the last 5 weeks. Dude is a workhorse. He's an absolute monster. I think as other teams and defenses tire, and we could ask KJ and Malcolm how hard tackling gets in December, in January, when your body's tired, when the weather's brutal. Sometimes running backs, you saw Rashad Penny last year, explode in the final month of the season. So if I'm looking at anybody, I'm probably looking at those offensive tackles, because they're going to play the longest season of their lives.
Mm-hmm.
And it has been terrific so far. And they have, you know, especially Abe Lucas. You know, the expectation, he was competing and he took the job. He's never looked back, and he's played phenomenal football. But just the wear, the tear, the grind, the bodies, I think that those guys, if I got an eye on anybody, it's probably watching those two. Because remember, they also played a ton in the preseason. They played into the second half of every preseason game. So right now, their body clock is going on just about the end of a college season, and now we know how important these final 7 weeks are.
Yeah, and I actually just thought of the fact that Pete specifically mentioned those tackles. We don't think about the fact that they're in on every single play, too. Running back, he might get a breather. Defensive guys, they're not out there every time. But here's what Pete said about getting the rookies some time off, especially those tackles.
Hopefully we can make it into that. We've talked that way with them. Just stepping away from it can give you a chance to see things a little bit differently, you know, a little more clearly. And I'm hoping that that's what takes place right now. But it's for them, I think it's really a convenient opportunity for them to just physically too, just because we've been pushing, particularly, I keep thinking of the tackles because they played every snap, you know. And so we'll try to take them, you know, take advantage of this. And we got no excuses. This should work for us.
It should. No excuses. Great time to get a bye week. I could just imagine Abe Lucas. I met him when he was very young, when he was right out of high school at Archbishop Murphy. He was about 245 pounds, Mike. Kind of like you. You know, you went from your old playing days as a guard.
That's right.
You dropped, you know, 100 pounds.
Dropped 100 pounds since my playing days.
Exactly. You were a swing guard. Yeah. About 265 you played in Notre Dame with the Bengals.
Back in the Rudy days.
I think Malcolm's going to be over the phone, so that you could totally play
Well, that's
him.
What I was thinking about. Uh-huh. That. He would never know.
No, he won't.
He's not going to take the time to look me up. Who cares that much?
Absolutely not. And Lefko just sounds like a guard name.
Yep.
Just a tough guard. Anyhow, I met Abe Lucas at about 240. Then I watched him through his career, called, I think, a game of his a year almost. And he got up to 290 and then to 310 and 325. And I could just imagine him last week at home just not getting out of bed. I could picture him like with a huge mixing bowl of cereal. Right. And I don't know why. I don't know him that well, but I could just see him get up and make like a whole box of cereal. And then I don't know what lunch is, naps, huge dinner, and just getting off his feet completely.
Brock, have you seen Forgetting Sarah Marshall?
Yes.
So when Jason Segel for a week just sits on the couch with the bowl.
That's right.
And doesn't get dressed. That's Abe Lucas.
Orders pizzas, right? Just pizza boxes, Chinese food, cereal, just chill. And now it's back to work.
Oh, if anyone can do it, it's an offensive lineman. Yes. So, all right. I kind of hope he did. If we get a chance to talk to him again, we'll have to ask him,
Brock,
hey,
just so
how
you
was
know,
your week of cereal eating?
Yes.
I was just going to tell you, not only did the Seahawks play on Thanksgiving, but in KJ play on Thanksgiving, he also had a sack.
Ooh.
All right. Yeah. Okay, we got to ask him about that.
That was Sherman had two picks. Yeah,
there
It was a quintessential Seahawks
game. I wonder, is that the only time they played on Thanksgiving ever?
We got a text from somebody else. It said 1986.
86.
Yeah. Seattle and Dallas. Okay.
86. And then what year was that with KJ?
That was, I think, 14.
14, nice. All right, good.
All right.
All right. Well, so much for this segment, all the predictions that was, of the second half.
We got to it. We got to. Who will regress? Right. We're going to get into more of it with KJ. Brock, we have time. We have a few hours to talk about this. Do. The best radio is the ones you come upon organically, just like the friends you make. So we'll get back to that. Plenty of second half predictions about who's going to be the X factor, what we think will happen over the course of these final seven games, and who needs to maintain their good performances from this first half of the season in order for the Seahawks to have a chance to win the division. So all of that coming up. Kalen DeBoer will join us as well at 7:30. But up next, is there a reason to be concerned about injuries coming out of a bye week? Pete Carroll addressed that, and we will let you know what he had to say about that. It's the Brock and Salk Show. You're listening to Seattle Sports Station on 710 and the Seattle Sports app.
Need to know.
15 minutes past every hour with Brock and Salk.
Here's what you need to know. Up first.
The Seahawks host the Raiders on Sunday, and yesterday they got back to work for the first time since returning from Germany. And Brock, as you can imagine, Pete Carroll was pretty fired up to get back out there.
Going back to work feels good to us. These guys were fired up to be back. They feel good. They feel strong. I mean, just in the walkthrough, they're bouncing all over the place. The schedule that we have this week will allow us to be fresh all the way to Sunday. By the way, we're doing it and celebrating the holiday too. So they're anxious to get back at it. And really test this is like starting the second half. And so feels like that natural break at the bye, and we're going to try to maximize that by coming out and playing a really good game this week. And it's all we got.
You know, one of the advantages of being a young team, Mike, is you should be healthier. Mm-hmm. You should be able to practice. So if you compare and contrast the amount of practice reps with this crew this year versus the last 5 years, it is an amazing uptick. And that's a big reason why I think we see an uptick in production on the field, too. These guys actually get to work. They get to bounce around. They feel good. I mean, save for Jamal Adams and Rashad Penny, this is the healthiest team I have ever covered with these Seahawks. And those two guys came into this season battling injuries and a litany of injuries over their careers, unfortunately. But, man, they are young. They are hungry. They're bouncing around. And that bye week couldn't have come at a better time as they hit the final seven-game home stretch.
Yeah, one thing to watch out for, though, Pete Carroll made sure to mention that they can't just throw guys back out there and have them go full speed. You have to kind of ramp back up after you come out of a bye.
Yeah, yesterday we ran the guys and worked them out in preparation for today. You know, and today we talked specifically about, you know, easing our way into the tempo. And so we're taking a little extra time in the individual, and the coaches are all aware of it, and the players have been warned a couple times, let's not try to do too much too fast too soon and get ready. And we got a good week here that we can ramp it up. But there's always a little bit of concern coming off the week. We asked our guys to be real active over the week and you know, to make sure that they stayed, you know, after. But we still need to be careful today.
Here's the second thing you need to know.
Well, ahead of the Apple Cup, UW locks up their coach for the foreseeable future. The Huskies and Kalen DeBoer have agreed to a contract extension through the 2028 season. He's going to join us at 7:30 to talk about that and the Apple Cup as well. A couple key financials, a salary bump from $3.2 to $4.2 million next year, then a $100,000 raise every year after that, and contract bonuses. Kind of expect this, right, Brock? Contract bonuses for like Coach of the Year, Pac-12 Championship, and escalating on from there.
Pretty remarkable what 11 weeks can do, right? I mean, he was excited. I think the people around the program were excited. I know other coaches that I had chatted with were excited that Kalen DeBoer was going to come in and have to clean up the mess that unfortunately Jimmy Lake left in the last couple seasons. And boy, did he ever in huge, huge ways. He's rewarded with a contract extension, as you said, through 2028. Jen Cohen said in her presser yesterday, I mean, this is just a fit. And when you know it, and it works on both sides of it, and he wants to be here, and he knows the upside and the opportunity here, and certainly from the Husky perspective and from AD Jen Cohen's perspective, that's a big deal to get him locked up. There's going to be vacancies, going to be a lot of job openings this cycle, as there always seemingly is in college football, and to end that conversation and reward him for what he has earned, job well done on all sides.
Well, and on the field, Huskies come in at number 13, the latest college football playoff rankings. A lot of Pac-12 in there, Brock. USC is number 6, Oregon number 9, Utah 14, UCLA 18, and Oregon State 21.
Maybe Ohio State and Michigan should actually look to join the Pac-12.
Oh, you come know, west, huh?
Because the rest of that conference, outside of Penn State, I think Penn State's the only other team ranked. So come west, young man. Come west.
Here's the third thing you need to know.
The Kraken are back in action tonight. Final game of their six-game homestand. It's been three straight overtime games, all of them decided by a 3-2 score. The Kraken are currently third in the Pacific Division with 23 points. How about Shane Wright? He scored a goal in his debut last night for Coachella Valley. It looks like the playing time may be helping out the young guy down there, the AHL team.
Right down there in Palm Springs, the epicenter hockey. Getting your work in. I was just looking at the standings, by the way, in the Pacific Division. And these Kraken are climbing. Right, they played a couple less games than the people on top of them. They get a win tonight. They can climb to second in the Pacific Division. A pretty awesome start compared to where they were just a season ago.
Yeah, Sharks night and then the Golden Knights, the team right up there. They will take them on Friday. And kind of a hot stove move that happened late last night. Of course, my timing's all thrown off by when I go to bed now. But it happened at some point. The Angels have acquired outfielder Hunter Renfroe from the Brewers for a few pitchers, including one of my favorite names in baseball, Jansen Junk. The Angels are making some moves this offseason. They've already gotten Tyler Anderson, former Mariners pitcher, and Gio Urshela to complement that team.
And there's some speculation that possibly that move would maybe limit the Mitch Haniger market, right? Because the Angels, the Dodgers, a couple of the teams that we have heard bantered about, thrown around as far as Mitch Haniger and a landing spot for him. They trade for a corner outfielder. Doesn't mean it's done, but just keep an eye on that one as well.
A robust market, as we heard.
There we go.
So just like my favorite passing time wines, they're always robust.
Which one is your favorite?
Which Appalachian do you like?
Well, I was telling him the reason I didn't really know much about passing time wines is because a little outside my price range, bro.
Oh, you're not into the top 100 cabs in the world?
No,
I think passing time found itself.
I couldn't find it at my local grocery store, so that's why I was not familiar with it. So a little more prestigious than that. But just like Mitch Haniger's interest, it is a robust market out there, like all the robust wines.
True or false? I ordered some passing time wine last night.
To send to me?
No.
Oh, good one. Oh, put him on the spot. Right?
Not send to you.
That's the best way to learn about it.
Well, I don't have to order it. I don't have to order for you. Uncle Damon could bring it right to the studio as he's done before. So
Sounds like he needs to bring it. All right. Sounds like Brock has just sent the call out there. So we'll see. You put the call out for
the
me to get a lot
time,
of deliveries, by the
simple.
Way. Yeah.
Why don't you ask Kalen DeBoer if he's ever had any passing time?
All right. I'll ask him about that. I'm going to sneak in an old oaken bucket mention as well him. Yeah.
Okay.
So we'll see. He will join us next. Kalen DeBoer, UW football head coach, will join us to talk about the Apple Cup, his new contract, and everything else around UW football. It's the Brock and Salk Show. You'll listen to Seattle Sports Station on 710 and the Seattle Sports app.
You're listening to Brock and Salk.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
On Seattle Sports Station.
Mike Lefko, Brock Heward here with you on a Wednesday. A lot of football to talk about. And please be joined right now by the head coach of the UW football team, Kalen DeBoer, here with us on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline. Coach, a big Apple Cup coming up this weekend. But some big news for you and the coaching staff yesterday. Washington announced a contract extension through the 2028 season. Congrats to you on that news. What does that mean to you and this coaching staff?
Yeah, thanks for having me, first of all, and happy Thanksgiving to you guys. This is a great place, and knew it before we got here, and just have seen it throughout the entire, calendar year, the entire season. So much support, and certainly appreciative of the opportunity to have the contract extended and to continue to move forward with our program.
How does that deal come together in season, Kalen? Because I know your guys' schedule planning and every minute is scripted of your guys' lives. How does a contract and a deal like that come together in season?
Yeah, I think I think we have a relationship here at UW where it's open and full of trust, and you start having conversations and you continue to work through it. When you have the time and it felt right, I think, on both ends. And, I guess I've just always operated that way. I feel like I'm pretty approachable. I appreciate just what the university wants to do and led by President Kause and Jen Cohen. And can't wait to be here. My family loves it here at UW. It's been a great year living here in the Seattle area.
I'm going to guess your daughter maybe had a say in this too and said, Dad, if I'm going to play softball here and become a star, why don't you just stick around as well?
I think that they are all relieved, you know, just there's been some moving going around the last few years, and to have some stability, just to be here as a family, and, you know, kind of be around each other. There was it was a long year. As fast as the year went, you know, my family really didn't get here till middle to end of June. And, you know, that's when really the routine starts, and you enjoy, you know, a little bit of life, you know, in the midst of the craziness of football.
Hey, Kalen, you tweeted out a video yesterday of Chris Peterson speaking to your team. What was his message to them, and why did you feel like it was important for him to come talk to this current group?
Man, it was an awesome day. I mean, there's so many things I want to say about Coach Pete and just what he did here. But I think really what it comes down to is, and the why is, and when I sat down with all these, you know, these players, the gentlemen on this team, you know, from last December and especially through January, and just really heard their stories, you know, so many guys here, you know, were recruited by Coach Pete, played for him, you know, many won championships, and especially in 2018. And, you know, I think there's just something to it. And I thought we were trying to get it worked out for senior day last week, and just the schedules didn't work out. Coach Pete was out of town, but, you know, I just feel like I owed it to these guys to have them, and I could control the guys that were here last year that didn't get a chance to see him, but I do control this year. And when you have a guy like Coach Pete who has given so much to this program, and he just, you know, he wants what's best for the Dogs, excuse me. And, you know, he'll do anything. He just wants to see the success happen. I mean, he's a great leader. So, you know, he's not concerned about the place being better than it was when he was here. He wants to see that happen. He wants to see it continue to grow. And he's just such a great person that way. His message, you know, was about a lot of things. And it was great for our guys to hear him, see him, and give him a hug, especially those that knew him well.
Mm-hmm. Newly minted head coach, Kalen DeBoer at the University of Washington, here with us for a few more minutes. You had said to our crew a couple weeks ago, Kalen, when we had the Oregon game, you had said everywhere along the way this offseason, in this busy offseason, you heard from most alumni and boosters and others, beat Oregon. Find a way to beat Oregon. Oregon was front and center in so many of those conversations, and obviously you got that done a couple weeks ago. Well, now comes the Apple Cup, the other enormous rivalry in the state. Give me your perspective. Characterize what you feel as far as this rivalry and what to expect Saturday night.
Yeah, I think that's the unique thing about here at UW is just, you know, a lot of times you have one rivalry that just is, you know, just, you know, above and beyond any other game. And yes, I think some fans would pick one, some fans would pick the other, but man, this one is huge, you know, against Washington State. And I just, you know, it meant a lot to beat Oregon, and it means an awful lot to beat Washington State. And I had said it earlier that everywhere I went, you know, you heard about the, you know, how are you going to beat Oregon, or what's the plan, and all of that. And let's make sure we get that done. And, you know, that was true with Washington State too. You know, it's an in-state rival, and you know, there's a lot of, I've said bragging rights, but there's just a lot of pride that goes along with, you know, winning those rivalries. And, you know, we got a big task ahead of us. They're having a great season, and we're on the road. It's going to be a big game.
Okay, so we're not all like Brock. We didn't necessarily grow up with this rivalry. I know you have come to it new, and a guy like Michael Penix is new to it. How do you build up the rivalry? Did going through a game like Oregon help, or do you treat it as, look, this is an important time, an important game, and we're just going to treat it like that?
Yeah, I think there's every day there's messages you pass on to the team. There's things you do. There's traditions that, you know, have been carried on throughout the course of the week. And, you know, there's people you have get in front of your team each and every day to just, you know, give their pieces and bits on exactly what it, you know, means to them, how important it is, and what the history is all about. And so, you know, every day that's happening. You know, we'll do that again today. We'll have, you know, some speakers tomorrow. And, you know, it's just fun learning about that. These guys are a part of the history of the rivalry now that they're, you know, playing in this game. And, you know, we want to make sure that history is on our side.
Ever been to Pullman?
One time, very briefly, for about 5 hours. So in and out.
Yeah. Yep. It'll be a little different at night as well. You know, they used to joke and say in order to recruit, they'd fly guys into Spokane at night and then they drive them 45 minutes and then boom, they're there. And, you know, they don't do the whole long drive all the way across the state, but it's a special place. I love playing there. I love the Apple Cup. And I guess just from a football pure perspective here, Kalen, as you look at this matchup with what they've done and their style of play, and what you guys like to do, what will be some keys in that matchup?
Well, I think that, you know, their season has been as consistent as it's been. You know, they've really got this win streak now here the last few games. And what they've really, I mean, the kind of their recipe has been starting fast. Their defense is extremely strong. They've had a great year consistently from start to finish here. And, you know, that you can hang your hat on that. You're going to be pretty much in every game. And so, you know, they've started fast offensively, though. And the first halves of the last three games, they've really flexed and, you know, done a great job getting the lead and then just, you know, counting on their defense to keep that separation there intact. And so they got a great football team all around. It's not just about their defense. The quarterback can sling it and got playmakers, you know, on the outside, too. So, you know, it's going to be a battle. It's going to be a lot of fun. There'll be a lot of momentum swings, but you know, I think that's really where it starts with them.
Hey, Kalen, Michael Penix is he's been dazzling. He's been incredibly fun to watch this year. When you coached him for that 1 year at Indiana, what did you see out of him there that made you think, all right, a few years later, he's going to be the guy for my program?
Yeah, I think just the talent level, the arm strength, you know, just he can see things develop naturally. And he was so young at the time, you know, really a redshirt freshman. I only had a few games with him, but I saw enough to know that really, you know, he can make all those throws. I think before the season, you know, when people would ask, I just, you know, kind of always pointed to, he can make that throw from the right hash to the opposite, or from a hash to the opposite sideline, you know. And I think that came to fruition a few weeks back, and people have certainly talked a lot about it, the throw against Oregon. And it's exactly that, but it didn't surprise me because I've seen that so many times. And now I just think you add the maturity that he's had with what he's gone through the last couple of years, you know, and just being able to stay composed, I think is a lot of you know, what he's gone through. And, you know, he's got great perspective and playing in the moment and not really looking ahead to anything, whether it's the next week's game or his future. You know, he's just enjoying the present because it's a special time.
Are you referencing this throw, Coach, down in Eugene a couple weeks ago?
Penix, clean pocket to throw down the sideline. He drops it in for Davis down the sideline, and there's nobody home. 62 yards for a possible tie.
Jason, there are very few in all the land that can make that throw.
Is that the throw you were talking about?
That's the one. That is the one. So, and, you know, again, it was a great throw. And in the moment, you know, it was just Mike doing his thing. And I think, you know, after the fact, when the game's over, it's really cool to see people talk about it and break it down and recognize, you know, the ability and talent he has.
Okay, but in the moment, let's be honest. Like, in the moment, when I'm in the press box watching that, and they got Bennett Williams, I think their best, you know, cover guy or certainly their best cover safety for Oregon is sitting on top of that. And that's kind of a clear out. In the moment when he let it go, did you think, oh my gosh?
Honestly, no. Well, I mean, I just felt like he was going to make it, you know. I just felt like it was going to be there because you're watching the same thing he's watching, you know. You're cued into the keys and what they're disguising and what really happens. And, you know, that's where they're, first look was going to be. Some people probably wouldn't pull the trigger, but I would fully expect him to do that. You know, he just toes that line, and sometimes it's cost him a time or two, but he toes that line on just anticipation and belief in his ability. And that was one where it all worked out.
Hey, Kalen, before we let you go here, and we certainly appreciate the time this morning, I'm really curious about the lessons you've learned and taken from your first head coaching job all the way to now. I mean, started at Sioux Falls, an NAIA school. You have built all the way up to UW, where I imagine there are a little more resources and the facilities are a little better. But what core values have you carried with you since that time at the NAIA school?
Yeah, I mean, just it always is about surrounding yourself with great people who share the same goals and mission that you have. We don't, you know, have the same personalities. Mine is much different than, for sure, Jamarcus Shepherd, right? That's probably the best example. But we have that great mix on our staff, and I've always felt like that's such a key thing. And but we share a philosophy as far as, you know, doing whatever we can to make this an amazing experience for our guys. And when that's the focus and you just worry about what's going on today and making the most of that opportunity, you know, it just, you can bring a team together. And that's the joy in it, is as you see it happen, you know, continuing to reinforce that, talk about the wins that are happening that are small in the day to day, not just the ones on Saturdays. And man, that's the pure joy in coaching.
Well, Kalen, we really appreciate the time this morning. Thanks for joining us, and best of luck in a big game this weekend.
Awesome. Thanks for having me on, guys.
Thanks, Kalen. Appreciate it, man.
Yeah.
Wow, that's pretty fun.
Did you play that call for him just because your voice was on it?
No. Did I know that he was going to mention that? No. Did I text Justin Barnes while you were asking him a question and say, hey, just make sure, just in case, you have that 62-yarder pulled up, and bam, wham, look at that radio.
That's yeah. Radio. It was,
this,
I mean.
This guy knows coaching.
One of the plays of the season. You're right. I mean, probably one of the biggest plays of this Washington season. They've had some big ones, those game-winning kicks, but that was a massive one.
You know, I'll say this, and this will kind of lead in a little bit of Blue 88 as well. It strikes me in your last question there. He was 67-3, by the way, at Sioux Falls. Mm-hmm. Won multiple national titles. Had just an amazing run there. There's two guys that have signed extensions here lately, just this week, in fact. The other is Lance Leipold at Kansas. Kalen DeBoer at Washington. I think it was on Monday on one of our takeaways, we talked about continuity. And one of the struggles right now in the NFL was scoring and offenses. And I said to you, man, whether it's continuity on your O-line or continuity of culture and program, when you don't have it, it's shown the most, I think, offensively. And you're seeing that with the Jets right now. They can play great defense. A new coach comes in, new regime, what have you, fire up a defense, get pass rushers. I think you can play great defense. I think the measure of great continuity and culture and belief in football, and maybe I'm biased here, but it's when you play just collective offense and all that buy-in of everybody. What do Kalen DeBoer and Lance Leipold share in common? They started at small places. They have a perspective and an understanding, as you said, of where you've come from. Lance Leipold was at Wisconsin Whitewater to Buffalo to Kansas. Taking him to a bowl game, huge wins this year, awesome stuff. Kalen DeBoer at Sioux Falls is an assistant at Eastern Michigan, Southern Illinois, a bunch of spots. Gets a head job at Fresno, head job now at Washington. The other thing they share is their staffs have all been together. Lance Leipold, head coach, OC, DC, have all been together from Wisconsin Whitewater to Buffalo to Kansas. They're the only regime in college football that can say that. Over like the last 9 years, since 2013, they've all been in those same three positions at three different stops. Care about one another. Know one another. Total continuity. Kalen DeBoer and Chuck Morrell and their staff and crew, they've been together offensively, defensively, and you show it. And it's shown up, and you see that in spades with that just belief of culture and continuity.
All right, well, I just watched KJ Wright walk in, so we better get to Blue 88.
Okay, here we go.
This is Brock and Salk's Blue 88.
Blue 88! Blue 88!
We take you to the field as Brock Huard breaks down three football questions as only he can.
Now here's your hosts, Brock Huard and Mike Salk.
Big offensive weapon coming into town on Sunday. Brock, question one here. Why is Davante Adams the best in the league?
Best route runner in the league. He is, and we'll get into this with KJ as well, to my eye, and I know Tyler just passed Doug Baldwin for number two in a bunch of spots behind Steve Largent. Probably won't capture Steve Largent's records and longevity and everything else. But Doug Baldwin, to my eye, Mike, was the best off the ball. His releases were so good. His cat quickness, his feel for what the opponent was doing, showed up in the red zone a lot, in the slot a lot. Davante Adams, in many ways, is that on the perimeter. And they move him around. He'll be in the slot. He'll be outside. He'll play all the different positions. But at his size, to have Doug Baldwin's quickness, release, instincts, feel, it's why Pete Carroll said yesterday, and he wasn't afraid to say it, that as far as who they face this year, Davante Adams will be at the head of the list. Here was Pete yesterday.
I mean, every challenge that a guy could bring in. I mean, he's an incredible player. He's so gifted and such a great competitor that he seizes the moments all the time. You know, the catches, the opportunities, the big plays. I mean, just look what he did, you know, like last week. And just classic. And an incredible route that he ran and a concept to get open. But he just came through again, you know. You can see why if he's on your team and then he leaves, you're going to have a space, you know, that's hard to fill. I think they've targeted him 40-something times in the last 3 weeks. You know, he's deserving and capable, and whether you know it, he can tell you I'm running the route almost and can still be effective. So he's a great player. He's the top guy we've seen.
Last two things along those lines, his hands as well. Tariq Woolen, Mike Jackson, when you see Trey Brown, like, he doesn't show his hands. It's unbelievable. His patience to stick and wait and to put his hands out. He gives that DB no indicator. Young receivers, either with their hands or eyes or body language, they'll trigger when that DB is going to then react because the ball's coming. He doesn't do that. And then secondly, he sets plays up. That last game-winning touchdown in that route, and that's Pat Surtain, who is arguably the best cover guy in the game right now. So every single moment of every single play, Trey Brown and Tariq Woolen and Mike Jackson, you have got to be on point.
All right, question two. You just mentioned him, Brock. Trey Brown is coming back. We heard he might get some playing time. Don't know how much that is yet, but what does Trey Brown bring to this cornerback room?
Quickness. So he's got some of that cat-like quickness and instincts, and he's got just a toughness, too. He'll come up and smack you and hit you. Now, if Pete Carroll was a little, not alarmed, but conservative as far as cranking guys back to 100, Mike, off the bye week, then you're going to be uber concerned about Trey Brown, who hasn't played since last November with a very significant knee injury. They have paced him all the way along. They have not rushed this process at all. Outside of Davante Adams, this is a below-average receiving core, right? There's no Waller. There's no Hunter Renfrow. Those guys have been out, and Renfro's on IR. And the rest of the crew is not elite by any means. So maybe you think, okay, this could be a soft landing. There could be some series here or there where you pick Trey Brown in. But if he's on Davante, as Pete just said, it's going to crank to 100, and it's going to get real, real fast.
Number three. Brock, this is not the question we're going to ask, but a question for you.
Oh, good.
You know the artist Paula Cole, right? In a song that she sings. Where have all the cowboys gone?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I feel like you know that, right?
Yeah. Yes.
All right, so along those lines. Yeah, I don't have to sing it for you. You can sing it during the break. Please don't sing it now. We get enough of singing on this show.
Okay.
So along those lines, where have all the fullbacks gone?
Yeah, where is Mac Strong and Sam Gash? Where are you? Where are the neck rolls that were famous on Thanksgiving?
Where are the neck rolls?
On Thanksgiving Thursdays, Lefko, that we watched growing up. You know, when you're playing offensive guard at Notre Dame in the 70s, that swing guard. Right? You had a fullback.
100 pounds ago.
You had a fullback in the backfield. Well, here's Pete's answer on where all those fullbacks has gone, because they're going to see one this week. The Raiders play more of that fullback, as Horowitz told us yesterday, than any team in the league. Here's Pete's answer to where those fullbacks have gone.
There's a couple of reasons, I think. One of them is that people, offenses, coaches in general, are more attracted to spreading the field than drawing the field in to some degree. There's still offenses that still use a lot of short splits and things like that, but using the field more so is part of it. There aren't very many of them. You know, we'll go through the draft, and they're not being raised in the college game at all. So you're always having to transition guys, and so it's a little bit harder to figure out who is the guy that can do that. There'll be maybe two or three guys in the draft out of the entire draft class that will be fullbacks, you know, that are legit and can show you that they can do that. So it's a little bit harder to find these guys. So
yeah, I would echo all of that, and that starts at the high school level, starts at Pop Warner level. Right, everybody's gone to spread. It's the proliferation of 7-on-7. You know what's not in 7-on-7 at the high school level or beyond? Fullbacks. It's receivers. It's 3 wideouts, 4 wideouts, multiple tight ends. It's all of that. So you're seeing that at the younger ages. There's just a lack of development. And I'll say this too. That slot receiver, the Deebo Samuels, the Cooper Cups, they are part fullback. like back in the day, you know, Bobby Engram in the slot, great slot receiver. Doug Baldwin, amazing. You know what they were not doing? They were not getting on the wing and pulling. They were not getting in the backfield and blocking on ISO, as McVay has done with Cooper Kupp and some of these just unbelievably strong and tough and good-sized and powerful H-backs that you're seeing, or, heck, even H-back tight ends that carry some of that. So the position, because of speed and space, and as Coach said, the lack of development, you've actually seen some of those attributes. I'd like it maybe when Cooper Kupp comes back, maybe a neck roll on Cooper Kupp.
Put a
little neck roll on the on,
what would
on,
be the best position to have a neck roll? Just the most random position to be wearing a neck roll.
His name was Billy Joe Hobert. He was from Puyallup. Keith Jackson called his games, and Billy Joe Hobert wore the cowboy collar, I believe in the Rose Bowl when they won the national title. So Billy Joe had some stinger, big physical QB. So he didn't have like the Sam Gash, you know, the white thing, pad that comes down. Or now you see a new one. Some of these guys are wearing this like huge halo looking thing. But a cowboy collar? Yeah, old Billy Joe was able to rock that thing pretty well.
The answer is Holder. I think if you have a Holder just running out there to get the snap, the neck roll runs off.
No, KJ would hit that Holder. He would knock him out if he tried to go on the field wearing a neck roll as a Holder. That ain't happening, Lefko.
Well, he's here. He heard what he said. We'll ask him about that. KJ is here. We have a lot to talk to with him coming up next. We'll pretend I had an NFL career as well when we get Malcolm Smith joining us at 8:15. A lot coming up in this next hour. It's the Brock and Salk Show. You're listening to Seattle Sports Station on 710 and the Seattle Sports app.